Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But sometimes you just say the sweetest thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Getting It Out Podcast. That was Chicago's Salvation with Drag. That's the first track off of their latest album, Mock, which was released back in December of 2022. But I think if you haven't heard it yet, it's about time you did. So I played it for you now, and I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. I love everything they've done. That's true. It's not an exaggeration. Big fan of the things that Salvation does. If you want to dive into the archives of Getting It Out Podcast, you can find an episode that I did with vocalist guitarist mastermind Jason Sipe. And if you don't feel like doing that, then I just suggest you dive into their discography. Pick an album. You're going to like what you hear. But on this episode of the podcast, I'm talking about Reptilian Records. So why don't you go check out their latest, Mock. It's on Reptilian. It's the only one on Reptilian. It's not the only record on Reptilian, of course. There are several good records on Reptilian Records. And I'd also suggest diving into that entire discography. But hey, you don't really have a time for that right now, I'm sure, because you got better things to do. And your better thing that you're going to do is you're going to listen to the rest of this episode of Getting It Out Podcast. Like I said, there's a conversation. You might want to hear it. It's with Chris X, the guy who's been running Reptilian Records since the 80s. The 80s? Do I remember if that's right? I don't remember if that's right. Has it been since the 80s? Maybe the late 80s? Maybe the early 90s? You know what? I forget what he said. But here's the good thing. You're going to hear what he had to say when I asked him that question in just a few minutes. But you know we don't get started with the serious business until after you get your daily dose of New Jersey's own Hot Zone.
Mickey. Make family out of friends, make friends out of enemies. Peace to my family, make friends till they bury all the places we've been. We're never sitting it out, we be getting it in. Where you getting it out? I said all the places we've been. We're never sitting it out, we'll be getting it in. Where you getting it out?
This episode features two people who used to live in Baltimore talking about things that happened in Baltimore, places in Baltimore, things that were born and lived in Baltimore. And that is probably no surprise to anybody who's ever listened to Getting It Out podcast before. Unfortunately, the Baltimore scene that we're so proud to have been a part of lost one of its most beloved members over the weekend. To some outsiders, he's probably best known as the noise guy for Pig Destroyer for a number of years, nearly 20. But Blake Harrison was a member of several bands throughout the years and made his imprint not only in his musical talents, but also in his personality and presence that others loved. I did not know him well, but he was impossible not to know as long as you were involved in the underground music scene. And his impact and loss has resonated throughout the internet. Just go on there, look on your social medias for Instagram, Facebook. It's flooded with many eulogies for a guy who certainly made his mark. It's easy to give accolades for artistic output, but it's even more impressive when you see most of the outpouring of support and love directed at simply who he was and how he'll be remembered and missed. For those local or interested, there will be a celebration of Blake Harrison on Sunday, March 24th at the Baltimore Soundstage. Final details are still being gathered for that. And the family and friends are also gathering photos, short videos, and creating a playlist worthy of Blake. If you would like to contribute to that, you can email rememberingblakeharrison@gmail.com. Blake has many ties to Reptilian Records. Several bands he was in released records on the label, one of which is Triac. This song, Snake of the Earth, features Blake Harrison on vocals.
Time to have it! Face the world! Get inside!
When I decided to start doing record label focused episodes here on Getting It Out podcast, I had a little bit of a list I made. It wasn't a little bit of a list. Actually, it was a very big, long list that I made of record labels that I wanted to speak to. But among the top were the ones that probably had the most impact on me and may not be the biggest in the world of music, but they're ones that I cherish and love. Reptilian Records is among that list, was among that list, still remains among that list. So I went in hot pursuit of label head Chris X, and it took damn near a year to finally nail this one down. You can ask him. I emailed him. I texted him. We even had phone calls to set this fucking thing up, and it finally worked out. Not without its issues of its own, but here it is. Finally, a Getting It Out podcast episode focusing on the great Reptilian Records. It was an honor and a privilege to sit down and discuss all things Reptilian with Chris X. And I'm happy to share that with you here. And rather do some sort of prolonged intro, let's just get right to it. I'm sure you're as excited as I am. But first, of course, I'm going to play you a track from a Reptilian Records band. This one is Cronies. Their new record, Live Sicko Love Fest, was released late last year. It's excellent. They're based out of New York City. And this track is called Hose in the Sand.
Let's get off at the same road. I'm gonna
Chris X, as somebody who grew up in Pennsylvania, York, Pennsylvania, but and often went to Baltimore, it felt like there was a lot of Chris X's at one point. Yeah. Are you aware of the other Chris X's?
Yeah. Well, I knew that there was the one Chris X in Philly area that was like a straight edge vegan guy.
Yeah. 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 There's that one. And I believe we had one in the York area too. So it was kind of confusing for me to figure out which one was which.
I spoke to the straight edge vegan one time and explained to him that I was a meat eating, leather wearing drug addict and he needed to change his name.
Well, but I don't think it worked. I think everybody hung on to it.
Yeah, we worked it out.
Good. Well, like I said, because I grew up in York, Pennsylvania, and was often going to Baltimore as I was figuring out, you know, underground music, Reptilian Records was been on my radar for years, you know, as far back as I can remember, especially going to the city. And then eventually I moved to Baltimore and I think we crossed paths while living there. I think you left shortly after I came.
Yeah, I think it was 2010 or 11 that I rolled out.
Yeah. And I think I landed 8 or 9. So it was, gotcha. so we probably occupied the same space at some point in time, but not in the long run.
Right.
So I was aware of Reptilian Records, but, a lot of that was just because of the record stores, which I understand is what this whole thing started as, right?
Yeah, actually, originally, what I wanted to do was be a record label and put out records, but I had no idea how to do that. So I had some friends who ran a comic book store, and I started helping them out for a while, and then they decided they wanted to open up a record exchange next door to their comic shop. And I said, well, how about if I open a record store and sell comics there and, you know, we'll be partners. Mm-hmm. And that's how it started was Reptilian Records and Comics. And that was at the end of 1989. And about 5 years into it, I bought them out and stopped carrying comic books altogether.
Where was that first store located?
That was the Fells Point store in Baltimore.
Yeah. What was the street?
On Broadway.
Right on Broadway?
Yeah. Yeah. I was a little up from the touristy section. I was sort of in the ghetto section.
Yeah. I'm familiar. I used to live on Chester, North Chester, 202 North Chester was my address. So I would always walk down Broadway when I was going I was up by the, basically I was between Fayette and Orleans, you know, so yeah, I had to walk down. Yeah.
I was at Bank and Broadway, which is one block north of Eastern Avenue.
Yeah. I know exactly where that is. Awesome.
Yeah.
Because you weren't there by the time I was coming along. When did you move from that spot to the other?
You know, I don't remember the exact year. I want to say it was maybe 2007, but I couldn't tell you exactly. Could have been 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then, so I guess you were at Fells when I was first around. I don't know how well I remember that. But maybe you have similar experience with Baltimore. My time in Baltimore is always foggy. Those those years are a bit blurry.
Yeah, it's a big blur to me. I mean, the only way I could tell what year something happened was by going by who I was dating at the time. You know, they each got about 2.5 years out of me at that point in time. So, you know, it breaks it up into little 3-year blocks.
Right. Little sections of memories.
Yeah.
Well, so you start the record store, and I think you said 89, and it becomes yours by 94-ish?
Yeah, and I guess the first single that I put out was in 93, I believe, and started out just, you know, doing some 7-inches by local bands, just trying to learn the process and help out some friends in the meantime.
Well, what was the Baltimore scene that you were into back then? Like, what was the music that made you want to release records?
Well, that's an interesting question. The music that made me want to release records wasn't the music. Let's say before I opened the Reptilian, and about the time I was opening was like when Steel Pole Bathtub and Unsane and Halo of Flies and the Cows were all like brand new bands.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that was what really got me wanting to release records. So, I mean, I was coming from a punk and hardcore background and then slid into the post-punk noise rock stuff. And I don't know, the scene back then was pretty much a mix. I mean, hardcore bands played with noise sounding bands and rock sounding bands, you know, and I guess grunge was just starting too. So all of those things in Baltimore, the scene wasn't really big enough to be sectioned off like it is these days, you know? So, I mean, I was into all of it. I just liked underground music. Anything that wasn't on the radio, wasn't on a major label. And that was the ethos of Reptilian. Was the only major label stuff we had was like Dead Boys and Clash and Sex Pistols, you know, things like that. But, you know, even when the grunge thing broke, we carried Sub Pop. But when the bands started migrating to major labels, I didn't pick up those records. And people would come in and, you know, the punk kids understood, but the normies that would come in couldn't understand why I had, say, you know, the first Nirvana record, but didn't have Pearl Jam and things like that. And I explained to them, well, there's another record store about four blocks away. And if you want Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, and Pearl Jam, that's where you go. If you want something different, this is where you go.
A specialty shop.
Exactly. I had my own little niche. That was the only way you could really compete, was to have your own thing going. And I guess, that was about the time that I started putting out records. Within the first 5 years of my shop being there, lots of bands who came through Baltimore would come hang out at the store, and, you know, I'd let them stay at my house, and I got to know lots of bands. And that's how I landed bands like The Dwarves and Buzz Oven and some of the larger bands that were in my early catalog. It was just because I knew them from them staying at my house after playing shows in Baltimore. And I was like, hey, I'm putting out records. You want to do a single with me? And I wasn't looking to like sign bands and make them contractually obligated to only work with me. I thought it was a better idea to work with bands that were on other labels, because that would help spread my label around. And it would also help the bands, you know, if you get more exposure, if there's more labels working your stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And the it's interesting you mentioned a couple of times now, singles, which like went away for many years, and now it's singles again, but like it obviously it's just like a digital thing.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, you know, times change, but the 7-inch was back then in the 80s and 90s, I thought that was the perfect way to check out bands. You could just spend like $4 and get two or three songs, or even more if it's a punk band, you know, with 1 minute long songs, you get a whole EP on a 7-inch. But I thought 7-inches were great. You could just get like, you know, the A side was something that the band really wanted to get out there. It was their 7-inch, their single that was representing them, you know. And then the B sides were often oddities, things that wouldn't end up on their records. So I loved that format. But yeah, these days, I mean, it's all digital, and 7-inches end up costing like $10. Who's going to pay $10 for a 2-song 7-inch, you know, when you could just go stream it for free?
Not me. I forget who I was just having this conversation. It might've been somebody else who's just doing a label now. No, it wasn't. It's this grindcore band I'm going to put out an episode for tomorrow, called Null. But anyway, it's like to get me to buy a 7-inch now at the cost of 7-inches. And I buy a lot of fucking records, but to buy a 7-inch for north of $10 is just something I can't bring myself to do. And there's like this invisible barrier that won't allow me to do it.
Yeah, it's crazy that they cost as much as an album almost these days. But it all costs way more than it used to, that's for sure.
Sure. Well, tell me about the first official Reptilian Records release. What was that?
There was two that came out pretty close to each other, and they were both Baltimore bands. One was a band called Edith, and they were pretty much like a grunge kind of band. And then the other band was called Ginger, and they were guys that had been in punk and hardcore bands before that, but this was like a little post-punk, but it was definitely still in the hardcore vein.
Did that then immediately go over well?
Oh, no, not at all. Actually, now that I think about it, before those two singles, I was involved in a compilation CD with another guy that we put out together that didn't actually have like a Reptilian catalog number on it. So I always forget that that's actually what I did first. And that was all Baltimore bands.
City then, that breeds.
Exactly. City that breeds. Yeah.
Featuring former Getting It Out podcast guest Next Step Up.
Yes.
Yes. Yes,
indeed. I was good friends with those guys. They, on one of their records, I guess it was Intent to Kill or something
Intent
like that.
Intent to Kill, yeah.
Yeah, they the pictures were taken outside of my store and down at the square in Fells Point. There's like a crowd shot of a bunch of people standing down there. Yeah, so that was pretty cool.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yep.
Yeah, that's I've had on. I don't know how familiar you are with this, but I love having Baltimore bands on, and especially, you know, the hardcore bands I'm familiar with, and which at this point has included Gut Instinct and Next Step Up and Stout, and, you know, just the very Baltimore, yes. Baltimore hardcore bands. And then I've gone all, you know, I try to get in all the relevant stuff from all the years, but that's one of the things that drove my interest with Reptilian too. But I always liked that Reptilian, had the different sounds than the stuff that that I was more familiar with. I loved picking up the compilations you used to. Speaking of compilations, the Hot Rock Action.
Yes.
So, like, and I know we kind of spoke about, or you kind of spoke about the use of 7 inches in compilations, but like, I don't know. Is there one for you? Actually, that makes me want to ask you, is there a compilation or something for you that you remember buying and setting you down a path to find new stuff?
Well, years before Reptilian, I was buying lots of punk compilations when I was a teen. And I guess there was one, what was it called? It was a double album that had like a Sgt. Pepper's takeoff on the cover, but it was all mostly British, but all punk rock. Mm-hmm. And that really, I listened to that thing until it was falling apart, basically. But then around the time that I opened the store, it was the Dope Guns and Fucking compilations on Amphetamine Reptile that really got me. Yeah. That they had me hooked, and that inspired me to do the Hot Rock Action series, doing, you know, four bands on each one. Yeah, I guess that's the answer to your question.
Yeah. Dope, no, well, which is interesting because, maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you're still going with Hot Rock Action, right?
Yeah, I mean, there was three that were all done way back in the early mid 90s, and then I did another one in 2020 that was supposed to coincide with a South by Southwest adjacent show that I was putting together, but that was when that whole COVID thing happened.
I heard about that.
Yeah, yeah. Some people really got into that. I don't know, wasn't for me. But That squashed that show and pretty much squashed that 7-inch comp too. But I was excited about it. It had screen printed covers with art by Coop. So, you know, trying to drag the 90s along with me into the 2020s.
It's working, man. I mean, I could be wrong, but I think AmRep's still doing Dope Guns too.
Yeah, he's done a couple here and there. Yep, he's still doing stuff. Tom's a friend and was definitely an inspiration. Definitely someone I look up to.
That's cool. They're Reptilian, AmRep are certainly labels that I think of when I think of noise rock. Is that bucket that you kind of have fallen into where you wanted Reptilian to be?
Yeah. I mean, I try not to only do one thing. I mean, I still mix it up. We still do some punk bands, and there's definitely some more melodic things that I've done lately, and the post-hardcore, but, you know, it's the post-punk noise rock thing is really, that's the music that I'm the most into. I mean, you know, I could put out punk rock bands, but I feel like a lot of hardcore and punk bands it would be better for them to be on a hardcore or punk rock label. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, for sure.
Putting an Epitaph band on my label wouldn't really do them any good or me, you know? So
when you had the store early on,
yes.
Was it I don't want to use lucrative, but obviously it was successful in that it lasted for several years, you know, almost 2 decades, right? So it's hard. It's just hard now to imagine a record store selling exclusively underground music to be successful.
Yeah. We opened in 89, and I'm pretty sure it was like 2006 or seven that the first store closed. And that's a good amount of time. I chalk that up to a few different things. I don't think that formula would necessarily work now. No,
right.
Because you can get underground music, you know, just go to your computer. But when I opened that store, obviously there was not an internet. And the only way you found out about stuff was Flipside or Maximum Rock and Roll or writing letters, you know, with stamps and envelopes. So, I don't think it would necessarily work anymore. And I was pretty lucky that it worked for me. And it kind of, I would not call it lucrative. I mean, for the first year, I lived in the back room, you know, washed my hair in the sink and slept on the floor. Mm-hmm. Eventually, it was making enough that I could get an apartment with a couple of roommates. And I mean, over time, it did a little better and a little better to like where I could, you know, afford to rent a place for myself. But at no point was I like buying a car or, you know, any of the normal things normal people do. I pretty much just worked 7 days a week at my record store. And that was enough to pay some cheap ass Baltimore rent and eat a slice of pizza, you know?
There's a little pizza shop just down the block there, more towards the water, that I used to stop at all the time. I think they had $2 slices. And exactly. It wasn't that great, but it was good enough.
It was $2.
Yeah.
Yeah, Baltimore was super fucking cheap when I opened the store, and the rent was really cheap. And I mean, that was one of the reasons that I ended up there and ended up staying there, was that it was so cheap. I was from Philadelphia, and there was already like, you know, five cool record shops in Philly. And there was a punk rock one. There was one called Chaos. And it was just strictly punk and underground. Well, I guess he had some rock and roll stuff, but it was 90% punk and underground music store. Mm-hmm. And that was another inspiration for me to do the store, was him. And I used to hang out there. His name was Brubaker. The guy ran the place. He had a double mohawk, and he was in a band called Circle of Shit. And he was putting out a couple of records. He had a hand in putting out a Ruin record and handful of other Philly bands. So he advised me a lot. I learned a lot from him, and his store did not last very long, maybe 5 years. And when he closed, I like bought his remaining inventory and stuck it in Reptilian, which was about the time I stopped carrying comic books. So I all of a sudden had a bunch of records to fill the place with.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I don't know. What was like having a spot in Fells Point? Cause I know Fells Point very well. I've gone to the hospital. I've in blackout fights, you know, around the corner by the bakery. Like I woke up, you know, like it can be an interesting place. And when you've been there, you had the store there for almost two decades. I imagine a lot of things changed and you saw a lot of shit. What's like your best record store in Fells Point story?
Oh man, there's too many to pick one, and it's hard to remember all of them, but it was pretty Wild West when we first opened up down there. It was definitely very blue collar. There was none of the gentrification and stuff that all came right later. It was not really a tourist spot. I mean, the market houses, yeah, kinda, but nothing like what it became. Even 5 years after I opened it, it had changed a whole lot. And then when they started filming like Homicide down there and stuff, it, you know, it sort of elevated the neighborhood. And then there was coffee shops and the other record store, Soundgarden, opened up about 5 years after me. So, you know, it was slightly on the upswing, I would say, but it definitely remained a place that was a little wild. Gunfights, fist fights, cars getting broken into constantly, you know, all that kind of stuff. I don't know. I witnessed a lot of crazy shit out the front window, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. And I bet if you had a back window, you'd witness even more.
Yeah. Luckily we didn't, or we would have gotten broken into plenty more, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. It's when I go down to the city now with my family, it looks really nice, you know, and it is pretty nice down there in that area. But it, you know how it can get weird at night, even now the way it is.
Oh yeah.
But, yeah. You get that weird combination of locals and tourists and shit starts to go a little strange.
Yeah, and you're right near Little Italy, and you're also like right next to some really nasty ghetto action. So
right, yeah,
it's quite wild for sure.
Good play. Well, what was it like owning that record store down there? And as far as customers, were you getting like daily customers, like a lot? Like obviously enough to you say eventually, you know, be able to afford to live.
Well, the first couple of years, it was definitely the comic books, I guess, that brought in the money in the business. And then as more people learned that my store was there and that it was an underground record store and that I carried stuff you couldn't find in any other record store, that sort of helped. And definitely the Baltimore scene was very supportive. And as the years went on and things kind of got divided up a little bit, it was still... You know, the hardcore kids still came in. The crusty kids came in. Skinheads came in. Burnouts came in. So, I mean, if I wanted to make more money, I could have carried shit like Pearl Jam and stuff right. like that. But, you know, I just figured with the other store down the road having that, I would just concentrate on little labels. And I did my best to like deal direct with all these little labels. I'd see something get written up in Maximum Rock and Roll. I'd write to the record label and say, hey, I've got a store. I'll carry your stuff, you know, and like Havoc Records, Felix Von Havoc used to drive his bands around on tour, and he would always stop at Reptilian. And, you know, I'd buy like hundreds of dollars off stuff off of him from his distro. And, you know, it just, I guess I got to be known for having stuff you couldn't find anywhere else. So I did have a bunch of regulars. There weren't really a bunch of people who lived in Fells Point necessarily, maybe a handful, but I did have a pretty solid crew of regulars.
That's cool. That's cool. I'm like imagining it in my head and the people coming in and out and who some of those faces might've been and what the neighborhood looked like. You know, it's very cool to be able to, I wasn't there, but I, you know, can transport myself there in a way, visualize yes. it. So, you know, you start putting out these records, and I got to imagine there's one that kind of hits eventually. I don't mean like hits in a big way. I mean like one that maybe surprised you with how successful it was. Was there early record?
The Buzz Oven single did pretty good. Mm-hmm. But when I did a Dwarves 7-inch, that got the attention of distributors, where they were like, oh, hey, we want that Dwarf 7-inch. So I guess we have to take some of your other crap too. But the Dwarves 7-inch, I sold a couple thousand of that. And that was the other ones were all like a couple hundred.
Is that I Will Deny You?
Yes. And then we did an AC/DC tribute.
I remember CD ads for that.
Yeah. Wasn't even my idea. Wasn't really a fan of AC/DC, to be honest. The drummer from the band Iron Boss, Pat Kennedy, brought the idea to me, and he had already like five bands who said that they would do it. And he's like, look, you know, the Super Suckers, you know, the Dwarves and stuff. Why don't we build this compilation and put this thing out? And, I said, okay, if I can get those two bands, if I can get the Dwarves and the Super Suckers to say yes, then I'll do this thing. So they did, and Electric Frankenstein, and then I started dragging some of the noise rock like Chrome Cranks and Lollipop into it. And that release, we got Coop to do the cover, which is how I met Coop, was I approached him about that. Like, hey, I see your art on these posters, or they're hanging all over my room in my store. I'd love to have you on a record cover. What would it take? And he was totally cool. And that really broke the label, I guess, as in not broke, like broken.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
in a good
exposed
way.
The label to a bunch of people and got me some distribution, got me some attention. So
why I remember it so well? This is like something that I was trying to think about. Like did you do like extra advertising in magazines or something? Because I remember this tribute record so vividly when it came out.
I definitely did a bunch of ads for that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, before that, I did maybe some little ads here and there, but not a lot. But for that one, I really gave it a push. And I mean, it was selling well enough that I could afford to keep pushing it. Right. So, you know, we did that on vinyl and on CD. And one little trivia thing about the vinyl was it wouldn't all fit on one record. So I picked two of the longer tracks to put on the 7-inch. And the funniest thing was that the band Zeke, their longest song, and at the time their slowest song, was on that compilation. So the 7-inch ended up being the Super Suckers and Zeke tracks. And then all the rest of it was on the LP.
That's a pretty good pairing. Zeke, I don't know how big they were when that came out, but they, you know, they had some fans.
Yeah. Yeah. They weren't all that huge back then. I mean, I think at that point they had a handful of singles and maybe two full lengths out on Scooch Pooch.
Well, so you're doing Scooch Pooch. It's a great label. Hey, speaking of label names, where does Reptilian come from?
I had a lot of reptile pets. And at the time where I was starting to, when it was gestating in my mind, like, hey, I want to have my own record store. Well, actually, I wanted to have a label. And I was into Marvel Comics, so that since childhood had got me into alliteration. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Everybody's name was like Peter Parker or Reed Richards or the Mighty Marvel Manor. So Reptilian Records just sort of made sense. And I had two pet snakes and two geckos and an iguana. So it just kind of made sense. Reptiles and records were like my favorite things. So,
that qualifies as a reptile guy.
Yeah. And then the logo, the Dimetrodon sailback dinosaur. I mean, my original idea that I'm glad I didn't go with was a forwards and a backwards R back to back in his fin. So that's sort of where he came from. But, and then, you know, it looking like a mohawk. And he was just my favorite dinosaur as a kid. So there you go.
Yeah. I remember having a toy exactly like that when I was a kid.
Yep. And then, you know, that was about the same time as AMREP. So a lot of people were like, oh, are you trying to be like amphetamine reptile? And it definitely was a little bit of a confusion at the beginning. There were people who thought that my label was somehow part of that label, or people would refer to me as AMREPtilian and things like that. But, you know, once they knew what they were talking about, they didn't confuse me with him anymore. I mean, he was doing much better stuff than I was at the time. So,
well, when I look back at the Reptilian discography, there's a couple of things that stick out in the early 2000s, and they're both picture discs.
Yes.
One, of course, is Remastodon and the other Pig Destroyer. And those two bands just kind of stick out on the label as well. Tell me about those two releases. How did you end up with those? And especially Mastodon in 2001. I mean, that's a... And pictures.
Yeah, a lot of people like...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Nowadays, don't even know that I did those records, you know, because, well, I'll start at the beginning. So I wanted to do a 7-inch series of picture discs that were all like sort of grindcore, or at least, you know, more metallic than my usual fare. Mm-hmm. So the first one was a Baltimore band called Daybreak. And I think there were, I don't know, 17 songs on their 7-inch or something like that. And, I've met the guys in Pig Destroyer, them being from Virginia, they'd been to Reptilian and hung out, and they were friends with Daybreak and all that. So,
Baltimore kind of claims them sometime, you know, sometimes they're claimed as a Baltimore band. Half of them like are there now. So I think it counts.
Yeah. And there's a few members, you know, Baltimore members in the band,
right?
But, Baltimore, DC, Virginia, that were all close enough together that there was a lot of incestuous bands going on, you know? But hey, I approached them. I said, hey, you want to do this 7-inch with me? And they were totally into it. So we did that. And I think I did maybe 2 pressings of that before their relapse deal happened. And they basically signed all their early catalog stuff over to relapse. So I could not continue pressing that 7-inch. And then Mastodon, dude, those guys were, you know, 2 of them were in Today Is the Day before they were in Mastodon.
Right.
And I've always been tight with Steve Austin from Today Is the Day. And so I met them then. And then the other 2 guys were in a band called 4-Hour Fogger that played in my record store. Mm. So that's how I met them. And then the 4 of them got together and formed Mastodon. They came through Baltimore and used to play at this place called Hal Daddy's, which was like a basement of a biker bar.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
There were like 7 of us there when Mastodon played. You know what I mean? It was like the beginning for them. And they were like, hey, we've got this demo tape. And they gave me a demo. It was maybe 5 songs or 6 songs. And I said, hey, I'm doing this picture disc series. We just did Pig Destroyer and Daybreak. You guys want to do a single with me? And they were like, yeah. So 3 songs on a 7-inch was actually their very first release. But, you know, the length of time it took back then to get something like that pressed, their relapse debut came out pretty close after that, like real close after that. So, yeah, I wanted to do a full length, but they got signed to Relapse, which made perfect sense to me. I knew Relapse would treat them a lot better than I could and could, you know, give them all the financial backing they needed. So that was cool. I think we did 4 pressings of that 7-inch before, once again, the rights to their early catalog, they signed over to Relapse. Relapse put out like a record of early tracks or whatever, and those 3 songs ended up on that, so I couldn't make any more of those.
So you didn't have any rights to it at all. The band had it, and you didn't do any of that with your stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I still kind of operate that way. Some of the stuff I've put out, like, I own that, and some of it I don't own. It's the bands own it. I've always felt like if it's their music, they wrote it. Sure. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like if I pay for the recording and all that, then I own the rights to that recording. But if they bring me something that they've already done, like, hey, we have these songs, you want to put them out, then it's really sort of a licensing deal from the band. I'm like, yes, I'll put those out and I'll give you X amount of copies or X amount of dollars per copy or whatever deal we work out. Mm-hmm. But like I didn't own them. So you know, the bands did. We did a picture disc LP for the Prowler in the Yard. That by Pig Destroyer, when Relapse did the CD, they weren't really doing vinyl at that time. They were only doing CDs. So we licensed it from Relapse and I did a pressing of 1,000 12-inch picture discs. But then it sold so well that Relapse was like, hey, we're going to start doing vinyl again. God damn it.
But probably a good idea by them, but
yes,
at least one end.
Exactly. I was still proud that I had put that record out. So that was cool.
Would they be the biggest records in the Reptilian discography?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say since I only did 1,000 of them. I mean, they did pretty instantly. But it was also around the same time I did the Dwarves album, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And we did that as a picture disc as well. And the AC/DC and the Dwarves record, those 2 things were the first things I did that sold a couple thousand. I think the Dwarves record, we might have, between LPs and CDs together, might have done 5,000 copies of that, which is way more than most Reptilian stuff. I mean, I was doing a lot of 500 pressings, you know, 500 copies was a regular Reptilian thing. So those were definitely some of the biggest ones.
Well, I asked that because like when I look at the records you've released over the years, I don't know if it's like my local familiarity, but like so much stuff jumps out at me. But again, like taking into account that maybe I just know what these records are and they're important to me because of, you know, being part of that scene to a degree. I don't know how big it was outside of the area, you know?
Yeah, I don't either. It's always been an uphill climb and an uphill fight for me because I'm not good at hype, and because I hate it, basically. I mean, being a record store guy, you get these one sheets and stuff about bands all the time, and it's always a bunch of hype, a bunch of nonsense. I never read or cared about any of that. I would just put on the promo that was sent. And if I liked the way it sounded, I'd play it in the store, order the records, and push them. But
you know, that reminds me. I think we had a conversation about this when we talked on the phone a few weeks back about you were talking about one sheets you mentioned there, and we were talking about PR stuff. And I said I get a shitload of PR emails every single day, right? It's so much. Like people wouldn't believe how much you get when you do stuff like this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's four paragraph biographies and explanations on albums. And it's like, I don't fucking care, man. And they're all written by the same people too.
Yeah. They've all got the same words in them, same buzzwords. And it's like, how many times can you compare your band to the same five bands everybody else is comparing their band to, you know?
Everything's so atmospheric and yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've always hated that stuff. So I'm not really good at it, which has kind of hindered me. I always have to get outside help on the hype stuff or the PR stuff because I'm like, listen to this. Okay. Listen to this record and then you'll like it. It doesn't matter what I say about it. Listen to it. But that doesn't seem to work. It doesn't translate to sales. Put it that way.
Yeah. But to me, it seems from the outside that and from everything you've said so far, that the sales isn't really the driving thing behind Reptilian.
It's not, which is too bad. It'd be great if I was able to like live off of putting out records and stuff like that. But no, it's more about if I really like a band, I want to put out a record by them, even whether they're a huge band already or completely unknown. If I dig it, I want to put it out. I want to help the little bands get their music out there. And with a lot of stuff, I was just like, if I don't put this band record out, nobody else is gonna, and then this band's gonna just disappear and nobody's ever gonna remember them, you know? And I think so many of the early bands I put out were a little bit ahead of the curve, and I wanted there to be a document of those bands. So that's still kind of the driving reason behind a lot of things that I put out is just, I think this is great. Nobody else is paying attention to these guys, so I want to put this out. I definitely think that a few bands could have done better if they wouldn't have gone with someone else. And I regret that for them, but you know, I do my best.
Right. Was there any, particular, like one single record that you thought that you just wish more people would have gotten to hear or have heard or still have the opportunity to hear?
I don't know that I could narrow it down to one. There's probably a dozen things that I put out that I think if more people had heard it, you know, it would have definitely gone over well. But, you know, I mean, I keep it all on hand. I don't throw the shit away. I don't, you know, do remainders or whatever other people do when they throw stuff away when they're doing their inventory so they can write it off or whatever. I just hold on to it so that 5 years later, if somebody discovers it, they can still get a copy. Like there was a band I did called Neutrino. They were a Chicago band who definitely sounded like a Chicago band, you know, in the shellacky sort of touch and go vein of music.
Right.
And it did okay at the time, but it didn't do great. But there are still people who will write to me from France or somewhere like that and be like, oh, I've discovered this band Neutrino. Do you still have any copies left? You know, and I'm usually pretty happy that I still do. Yeah, I mean, that is more rewarding to me, I think, than if I would have sold a whole bunch of them and sold out and made some money that I would have spent and it would be all gone by now anyway.
That's true.
So
that's true, and that's cool. But you're still like, to me, I go, I don't know, at this point, Reptilian is like if it's on Reptilian, I pretty much know I'm going to like it. Like it's very rare. There's a very few exceptions to that, and I don't know if it was just recently over the last few years, but, or maybe it's, I don't know. I think because you've been pretty consistent with your output over the years, but like going back to like when you started doing records for Horry's or Chief Tail or like stuff like that came out like a few years ago that I love Bulls. Yes. And then that's right after that was Chat Pile that you did. And which of course now has blown up Big Water. There's been like all these bands recently that there's actually going back a couple of years now. But I don't know. It's just been like, it's been reinvigorated my interest with some of the stuff you've put out over the last few years. Cause I think it's like the best noise rock stuff is coming out on Reptilian.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, you know, once I didn't have the store anymore, there was a bunch of stuff going on in my personal life for a handful of years, getting married, moving away, doing a bunch of stuff like that, that I don't know. I didn't put out a whole lot for a couple of years there, but once I moved down here to Texas and I really it's my focus. You know what I mean? The label is pretty much what I do all the time. Mm-hmm. I do pick up a job here and there, so I have some money, but, if sales aren't great and I need to put out a new record, I got to get some money to put it out. So, but yeah, I mean, like that band Bulls is a perfect example of something that I knew the band wasn't really going to last for long. Cause all the guys were, in their 30s and getting married and having kids and that kind of stuff. And I really wanted there to be a document of that band. Like, of course they've got other stuff that they put out on Bandcamp and things like that, but a physical document needed to exist. So them, and there was that band Super Thief that, the record I did by them, like that music had been available for probably a year already online by the time I put the vinyl out. But I just knew that it needed to exist in a way that people could have it in their collection for decades and not just lose it on Bandcamp when Bandcamp disappears one day,
Yeah, what is going to happen when that happens?
A lot of people are going to suddenly realize that they don't have any music. They're going to own nothing and be happy or whatever it is.
Adapt the Krishna way. No materials. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, not me, man. Very materialistic.
Yeah, same here. I need these fucking things on my shelf. They take up so much space in my house, and I don't stop. I just keep going and going and going.
Right.
But one of the ones that I bought, I guess it's going back a few years. I think it was on one of the first few pressings, was that Chat Pile, This Dungeon Earth, Remove Your Skin Please record. And I guess at the time when you're putting out two, you don't realize that they're about to blow up like 2 years later, right?
No, I mean, I definitely knew that they had a future, I definitely knew, like when I talked to them about putting that out, I tried really hard. That was a band I tried to actually sign. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I was like, look, I want to put this out because those two EPs already existed online and right, as cassettes or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I want to put these out as a record, but I really want your next record too. So I tried really hard to make a deal where I would get their next record or two. But they were smart and I understood their, they were like, well, there's a lot of labels talking to us. I was like, okay, I totally get that. And, I want you to be as successful as you can be. So I'll still do this record. Just, let me keep it impressed. Let me keep on putting them out. So yeah, they've blown up ridiculously. I mean, they're going to be, I don't know if they'll get Mastodon big. They might, I don't know, but that's the closest comparison I could make for something that I put out, where I put it out and then several months later the band is huge.
So. Yeah, and I love that they're huge. And God's Country is an incredible album. It's just amazing to me that I don't, like, in a way I don't get it. Like I love it, right? I think the music's great. It just surprises me that it caught on the way it did.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I agree.
One of the other bands who you put out a record for recently, who I really love, is Salvation. They put out Year of the Fly a couple of years ago, and it was like one of my favorite records of the year. And in 2022, you did Mach, which again, yes, is excellent. Tell me about Salvation and how you came across them.
I actually hadn't heard them. They played at the No Coast Fest down here.
Yes, the Jeff Helen curated, yes, fest.
Jeff of Horries, yes.
Yes.
White Drugs. That fest, for the first few years, every year there'd be a couple of Reptilian bands would play, and every year I would discover a new band by going to that. And Salvation was one of those bands. They played and blew me away. And also, it was really quite a funny coincidence. The drummer in Salvation was the drummer in that band Neutrino that I mentioned.
Wow.
The Chicago band that I put out way back. So, they had like, I guess, 2/3 of that record already recorded. And this is another thing I've run into a lot lately. And that is bands record like 5 or 6 songs. And like, hey, we've got this EP we want to do. You want to put out this EP? I'm like, well, here's the problem with an EP. I can't do 7 inches. 10 inches cost a little bit more than a regular record because it's just an oddity, an odd size. You know, they don't press that many of them. So maybe, 50 cents per record more than a 12 inch. But, if you put out a 12 inch EP, people expect to pay less for it because there's less music than an LP. But it costs exactly the same amount of money to manufacture. You know what I mean?
Right. Sure.
So it's like, I try really hard to convince the bands to make it an album. And that's what I did with Salvation. I was like, look, if you guys can go in and like, give me 3 more songs. And they were smart because they were like, well, we do have an old song from our first record that we want to rework. So, they did that and wrote 2 new bangers. And yeah, that record is great. I love it.
Yeah,
I'm excited to hear they're working on new material now, and I'm really excited to hear that too.
Are you going to be doing that one as well?
I hope so. Like I said, I mean, if the bands decide they want to go somewhere else, I can't stop them because I don't own them. They own themselves. So all I can do is hope that I do a good enough job with their stuff that they want to stick with me.
Well, I really appreciate that. And I know, I'm sure they do too. You know, like I understand like other people might be like, that sounds like a terrible business decision, but it's,
yeah, I mean,
but way to me, back, it's great.
Yeah. I knew the guys who ran Jade Tree Records back in the day, and I knew Tony from Victory and all that. And those guys were always giving me some pointers and some advice and stuff. And their whole thing was, we're in the business of owning masters. That's why we do this, to own the master. We own the master recording in perpetuity. We can put it on soundtracks. We can do whatever we want, put it in commercials, and we'll make money off of it forever. And I was like, oh, well, I'm not doing this to own masters. I'm doing this to put out good records. You know what I mean? Like, my whole drive behind it wasn't the dollar sign. It was the music. So yeah, that's still my attitude. Like if a band wants to go somewhere else, like Chat Pile wanting to do what's best for them, going to bigger labels, that's totally understandable. And I wish them all the best.
Wow. Again, I think that's very cool. And similarly, I was, I still am actually very good friends with Dom Romeo from A389 Records.
Yes.
And he had a similar setup with that. I remember him telling me early on that everything was handshake deals for him.
Yeah.
And my head, not really knowing shit, I thought that doesn't sound very wise, but then you hear how far it actually goes just to operate that way rather than the cutthroat way of stealing people's, not stealing, I shouldn't say that, but taking people's records.
Yeah. There was a period of time. Maybe it was around 2003 where I was kind of really giving Reptilian a big push as a label. Like the one I was doing Easy Action, and I had Easy Action, The Dwarves, Cutthroats 9, like a bunch of good shit back then. So yeah. I tried contracts. We wrote up contracts for those releases, and that was the first time that I paid a PR person to Jamie Wolf, who worked with Frank Kozik at Man's Ruin Records. She did my PR back then. And I tried that. I tried the contracts and all that, but it didn't stick. It didn't work for me. There's definitely a few times where I wish I had done something like that, like where a band takes their stuff away or whatever, that I wish I could have held on to it. But again, it's really their music. It's their art.
So. Yeah, yeah, I'm sure there's pros and cons, you know what I mean? To me, like, just the human part of it is what I appreciate. The respectfulness in a business where everybody says can be so dirty and disrespectful.
I mean, I try to like I want to, if I like a band, if I like their music, I want to know them. I want to talk to them. I want to hang out with them. I want to be their friend. So that often is more important to me than owning their shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I just try to have a friendship relationship, and it's a handshake deal. And there's definitely some bands that have, I wouldn't say fucked me over, but done some things I wish they hadn't done or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure there are some bands that might feel the same way about me or might think I didn't work their stuff hard enough or whatever. So, you know, it's a give and take.
Sure. Exactly. You can't win them all, as they say. Well, last year you released a fair amount of records, actually. 10-ish, maybe, not quite, but still a lot.
Yes.
It seems like Reptilians is as active as ever. Not the most active, but, you know, you're putting out a lot of stuff. The last thing that I remember from 2023 was a 400 Blows Black Rainbow reissue, which is not a record I was familiar with at all. So that's why I was happy that you put it out. And it's a record I've enjoyed. Why did you choose this particular record to re-release?
Again, I've been friends with that band for years and years and years. They played in my records. They played at the original Reptilian store. And I've stayed in touch with Scott, the singer, for years. And I actually didn't approach them. He actually approached me and was like, would you be interested? We were thinking of reissuing this record on vinyl. And I, without even letting him finish his sentence, I was like, yep, I'll do it right now. I love that record. So I was all over that for sure. Yeah. I mean, we were lucky. It just ended up being the 20th anniversary. It wasn't even something that was planned. It was just like, hey, this happens to be the 20-year anniversary of that. Yeah, it just sprung out of friendship, you know?
Was it planned to have the first song on the Cronies record also be 400 Blows?
No, that was a very weird coincidence. And the funny thing was that the song is called 400 Blows by the Cronies, and it kind of sounds like 400 Blows in a way. And it has a riff in it that's a very 400 Blows sounding guitar riff. And I asked the Cronies about that, and they didn't even know there was a band called 400 Blows.
Really?
Yeah.
I was positive there had to be some type of correlation.
No,
this is Reptilian 164 and 165, and the opening track is the name of the next record.
Yes. It definitely caused a little bit of confusion, but those guys are really young, and they did not know about that band.
So that's cool.
They said, no, it's named after the book. I was just like, really? So you've read that book, but you've never heard of this band. That's awesome.
That's super cool, actually. It's even cooler that they had no idea.
Yeah.
Well, I believe those were the last records you put out in 2023. There was a couple other ones, the Miracler and Nerver Chap Pile split, of course, were both high up. Even that Turin Horse record was very cool, and I thought underrated in a way.
That one's a difficult record for a lot of people, I think. I mean, it's more experimental than most of what I do. It's less of a straightforward, like, you know, rock or punk rock sort of thing, and definitely some crazy experimental noise, almost jazz like. Those guys are from Italy, and it was a two-person
city. Do you know what city?
Two-person band.
My wife's from Italy. That's why I'm asking.
I'm not sure, because right around the time that we started talking about doing that record was also, once again, right around the time that everybody thought there was a pandemic going on.
Italy took it seriously too.
Yeah. And those guys actually had to leave Italy because of all that was happening there and them not wanting to take experimental drugs and things like that. They had to actually move to Spain.
I believe it. My in-laws were actually stuck in Italy for an extended period of time because of that. In Milan, it was like the epicenter of things happening there. So, yeah, yes. Italy was nuts about the coronavirus.
Yeah, they wanted to they basically had to flee. They had to run away. They got fired from their jobs and everything. It was pretty crazy.
We went over there it was when it was done here, right? But when we landed over there, you were still you still had to wear masks outside and everything. I think while we were there, they lifted their mandate on that, but it was like way past when we were doing shit here.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yes. The Turin Horse. That was an interesting record. The Miracler record. I fucking love that record.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I listened to it. Like I basically play the hell out of everything before I put it out. Like while I'm working on it, you know, while we're getting the art together, while we're working out the deals, I listen to the records over and over and over. And that Miracler, I can still listen to it every day. So, and the Cronies, like I've been following them for a while on Bandcamp, and I love everything they've done. So again, that's stuff I can listen to over and over and over again.
Is that where you find yourself looking for bands? I know, well, you mentioned, you know, going to No Coast and scoping out the bands there. But you also just said they're looking on Bandcamp. Is there a place that you find yourself going to find new Reptilian bands?
No, I'd say mostly if I'm going to find a band, it's because I saw them play live. With Cronies, there was a review site called Fuzzy Sun or something like that, that did some like experimental and noise rock kind of reviews. And I was on their mailing list, and they comb through Bandcamp for their stuff that they write about. And that was where I heard about the Cronies. Most of what I put out, either somebody turns me on to it or the band sends me something or I see them play live. There isn't really somewhere I go looking other right. than shows. So
yeah, that makes sense. That seems like the easy way to do it too. And I don't mean that you're taking the easy way out. I just mean, that seems like the logical, simple way to do it. A practice you've no doubt honed at this point.
Yeah. I'm not really, I don't have time really to go digging and looking as much as I used to. But yeah, usually either they seek me out or somebody will turn me on to it. Like some of the bands I've done, other labels would be like, hey, you know, these guys sent me a demo and I kind of can't do it right now. And I thought maybe you'd want to do it. Like Miracler came to me through working with Bobby Johnson of Ghost Is Clear Records.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He and I are pretty tight and have a pretty similar tastes in music. So yeah, we did this, a 7-inch by Miracler. It was a split label release, and then they had a record ready, but he already had like 5 things going on. So I was like, I'll do it. I'll gladly do it.
That's cool. I've noticed those record labels that you seem to be running in parallel with, like Ghost Is Clear. I think you Hex. Did the Hex. You do stuff with Hex too?
We haven't actually done something together, but we talk and I get him to write stuff about my bands. And
I enjoyed. I did one of these with him too. It was very early on, actually. Yes, he was like, I listened to it. Oh, there you go.
I considered his label and Ghost Is Clear and my label to kind of be, you know, three peas in a pod. Mm-hmm. So. We talked about doing a Grizzlore record together, I think, but then I think he just did that himself. And Bobby and I obviously did that Nerve or Chat Pile thing together. So yeah, I've never looked at it as competition. You know what I mean? Sure, there's a little bit of that when it's like, oh, I wanted that band, but you got them first.
Right.
But we still like congratulate each other on it. You know what I mean? So it's like,
of course.
Yeah, like Bobby was like, oh, Cronies, you got Cronies? They're the future of music. It's like, I wanted to do them. They've been on my radar. I was like, I didn't know that. Well, they're mine. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a good scene going between a couple labels like that and myself.
I think so too. I think, and you guys, all three of you labels are ones that I go to for this type of music. I'm all over the place with the stuff that I like, hardcore, metal, punk, noise rock, whatever. I like so much different shit but I have my specific labels that I go to for.
I've noticed that about you, and I like that about you.
Good. Thank you.
that's the whole thing. I mean, like, you know, I wish I could branch out a little bit more into other styles of music. I guess if the label was doing more and making more, I could do that. But like we almost did. You were talking about Baltimore Hardcore. There was a band called Torn Apart. You remember them?
Yeah, of course. They ended up on Ferret Records, but yeah.
Yes. Love that band. Good kids, good friends. We used to hang out, played in my store a couple of times. We even recorded them playing in my store, and we were going to do a 7-inch with that. I think that was right about the time they broke up.
Mm. Yeah, that's cool. Almost had forgotten about Baltimore hardcore band.
Yeah, yeah. They don't like the other ones you mentioned, Stout and Gut Instinct and Next Step Up. They're sort of like the tough guy hardcore stuff. You know what
I mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the more old school sounding New York style hardcore, whereas Torn Apart was definitely more metal.
Sure, definitely, yeah. Certainly more metallic. Yeah, if they fit where they ended up on Ferret, but you know that was a whole different thing. So there you have it. That was my conversation with Chris X of Reptilian Records. And the song you just heard was Egg by Miracler. That's off of their album, How I Became the Devil. If you want to hear the rest of that, I encourage you to do so. Go check it out now, wherever you listen to music. Buy the record. It's worth it, no matter what. You heard that one song. That's as much evidence as you will ever need. Of course, I want to thank Chris for his time, for his conversations, for his output, for the things that he's done that we all get to enjoy. He himself has had quite an impact with his passion to put out these records. And even pretty recently, I saw a surge of people that I know posting memories of the record store itself, the Fells Point location, which I, of course, excitedly told them, hey, be on the lookout. There's an episode of Getting It Out podcast coming featuring Chris X talking about Reptilian Records and that very store. You just heard it, though. That's what that was. If you think, hey, man, that interview ended kind of abruptly talking about Torn Apart. Yeah, it did in real life, too. I forget what happened exactly. Somebody's power died. And then we got back on, discussed all the things that were coming up in 2024 for Reptilian Records. And for some reason, that part didn't record. So you're going to get it here from me. The big news is that Reptilian now has a European distribution deal with soundsofsubterranea.com. They're going to be carrying like the full catalog. So that's great for anybody who wants to get stuff from Europe. Speaking of Europeans, there'll be new releases coming from Desolate, a 10-inch from a band from Spain called Palmer de Troya. There's new stuff from Thrall and God Bullies, who will fit in perfectly with what Reptilian Records does. And coming back for new albums, will be a new one from Prayer Group, label veterans Super Suckers, those Chicago Killers that opened this episode, Salvation. And there was a new deal struck to reissue the Electric Frankenstein albums and maybe even some new ones. honestly, it sounds like Reptilian is about to be as prolific as ever. So keep your taters peeled for all that. And thank Chris if you ever happen to run across him in that Texas desert. I want to thank you for listening this far along. Coming soon on Getting It Out podcast, we're going to be talking to MC from Skid Row Garage about the 15-year anniversary show that's on the horizon. I've also got interviews with another Baltimore entity, Locrian, Norway's Bokassa, and Vegas metalcore act Wrist Meat Razor. But we're going to end this with another track from a Reptilian Records artist. This is 400 Blows, The Root of Our Nature from Black Rainbow, available now from Reptilian Records. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
On a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.